I'll share with everybody. Yesterday, Aria took us through 7 minutes of a meditation and a stretch, and it was awesome. And I'll probably set it as an audio and put it out for people to listen to. And it was phenomenal, the information that she came up with automatically. She would say, you know, breathe in and breathe out constantly. And at one point she said, reach up like you're reaching to the rainbow and grab the breath and bring it down to your lap. And now taste the breath and breathe in and breathe out. I mean, it was just awesome just to participate in that with her. And just the, she has, that's beyond her years. It's just amazing. I'm not sure where she gets everything. It's just automatic for her. And that was enjoyable to spend that 7 minutes with her. And she probably could have gone on another 30 minutes, but she needed to get going to go to ballet. And so we had to kind of cut it short. But anyway, it is there within all of us. It's just that most of the time we don't listen. And I think she's getting intuitive guidance as, you know, she grows along and just her imagination is full and free. And it's just, it's great to be a part of that. And Michael's not with us yet. I'm going to start Podbean. Welcome, Sandy, to Podbean. And if you've missed part of these shows, not all of them have been out of the Enlightenment book, but you can go to our website and under Kaboris, you gonna do again. I said yesterday, we've created shorts, which are 30 to 60 seconds long on our Facebook page, or not Facebook, I'm sorry, on our YouTube channel. And you can get to the YouTube channel either by typing in youtube.com/Michael Rice, or you can go to our website, and up in the top there is a link to YouTube, and if you click it, it'll take you directly there. So I'm going to step away for just a second and see if Michael's having any technical issues. I'll be right back. Okay, I am back, and if you have a question, whether it's pertaining to the Enlightenment or anything else, please press 1, let us know, or you can drop me an email at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org. And we do have a question from Michael Tatey. Whenever Michael gets on, I will read the question, and we will address that. So give him just a moment. We thank you for being with us. Thank you for your patience. And I hope that the recording came through okay. It was a little challenging to hear Jamuna on the Podbean. It was really a quiet connection. So I'm not sure how that works, but I'm glad that we have the opportunity and the means to have a connection with people in other countries that can't just call in. And this, you know, Podbean, you have to download the app to your phone, and you can click that you follow us. Now, it'll show up because it is a podcast program. It'll show up that there are two Mindshifters radios. One of them, it's picking up from Blog Talk, and that one's got our picture on it. And then the one that has a glowing heart is actually the Podbean podcast. And if you click on that and say that you're following us, it will actually send you an email or a text and let you know that we are live. And you can, when you dial in there, on your phone. You're not having to use cell minutes or anything as long as you have internet connection. And you can either chat in the chat room there, or you can press the little telephone icon down at the bottom, and it will let me turn your microphone on in Podbean, and we can talk to you. Like I said, for some reason, and I don't know if it's on the other end, I believe that Jamuna said that if you didn't have it on hands-free, if you had it just on the speaker, put your headset in or whatever, it is louder, so that works better than if you've got your phone on hands-free. It makes it a little bit louder so we can hear you. And Michael's with us, so I'm going to say, welcome, Michael. I was just telling them while I was waiting for you to get in about our meditation with Aria yesterday, and that perhaps...
That was so awesome.
Yeah, and perhaps I can turn it into an audio where people can hear it. But welcome to the show.
Thanks, dear heart. And welcome, everybody. Glad we get to play again and move forward. Had a question come up. Would you like to read the question, sweetie?
Sure. So it's from Michael Tatey, and he says, Michael, could you expound on the statement from a couple shows ago where you talked about fear and hostility being a mental illness? Am I recalling that correctly? Assist me back to the point if not. And if so, I would like to have more information on how and why that is. In other words, how your fear and hostility could be classified as a mental illness. And not from a doubting standpoint, but wishing to comprehend this more completely. And how would I present this concept to others with demonstration to solidly relay the information in a reasonable format?
Well, I'll answer the second question first. Present it to people very carefully, because it's probably going to resonate some things for people. And for me, the best way to understand that one is through an analogy. So let's imagine that I have a diesel automobile. It runs on diesel fuel. And if I pull up to the pump, unfortunately, the diesel nozzle on it won't fit into a regular car, but let's imagine that it did, and I filled my car up, you know, let's say the tank is empty, I filled my car up with regular gasoline. What's going to happen? My car isn't going to go very far. It's going to be diseased. It's going to have a fuel disease, i.e. it's going to quit running, and it's going to take some repairs, some, you know, some money to get it back on track again. Gas tank's going to be cleaned out. Fuel lines are going to be cleaned out. Let's see, I forget exactly how the fuel is distributed in a diesel engine. I think it's just a pressure nozzle. If I remember correctly, it's a little different than a gasoline. But anyway, so we would say that the car, if we used a disease analogy, the car has a fuel disease. So my offering is, after years of working with people and realizing that the only time that people are sane is when they get back to a mind fueled by love. When the mind gets back on track, is connected into that space of love, then all of the rage and crazy stuff that's going on with humanity disappears. And actually, I started to use this idea just privately for myself, as it dawned on me that hostility and fear are a mental illness. And, you know, with our analogy with the car and the diesel fuel, your mind, my mind, is designed to run on the energy of our original essence, which I offer is love. If you can verify that for yourself just by holding a newborn child and tapping into the essence of the newborn. And, you know, having asked tens of thousands of people over the years between Jeannie and I the question and gotten answers from those people, and it doesn't matter what culture we're in, everybody's answer is always the same. Some variation on the theme of love is the scripture that they use for the newborn. So I'm offering that that's the energy that our minds are designed to run on. When it first occurred to me that hostility and fear might be a mental illness, I started to use that idea just with myself. When I find myself in some sort of hostility or have a fear-based thought come up, I'd say to myself, this is my mental illness. And what I found was that it was a whole lot easier to shift away from it when I realized it was a mental illness rather than something that would be useful or helpful for me. And so if the mind is fueled by hostility and fear, it never works properly. It never gives us constructs. And remembering that, you know, perception is a construct of the mind, it never gives us constructs that are sane. Hostility and fear, when fueling a human mind, turns perception into deception. And so as we call the diesel engine trying to run on gasoline, having a fuel disease, the mind running on thoughts based in hostility or fear has a mental illness. So that would be my take on it. And, you know, for me, the verification of it came personally for me, and then I've gotten verification from a few people who've gone, yeah, that's a way that I've really caught myself and been able to be inspired to correction rather than holding on to my fear or hostility-based thoughts, is to recognize that my mind isn't working properly. And if it's not working properly, you know, obviously the average person is going to go for, what do I need to do to correct it? What do I need to do to get that thing back on track? And what I need to do to get back on track is reconnect it to love. So that's my take. And if you happen to be with us, Michael, and that leads to any thoughts, then please push one. Let's have a conversation about it. We're on page 80 on the in the Enlightenment book in the dictionary. And if you look halfway down the page, the word aliva, and this is part of where that insight came, is an Aramaic word that's a noun, and it speaks of the source of our thinking. In Aramaic, it's called the heart. Or, pardon me, in Greek, it's called the heart. So the Greeks translated it as heart. But it's more properly in Aramaic, the mind. And if we go back to Yeshua, it's like just a number of things added up to make sense of this for me, and then the practical application just cemented it. When you hear Yeshua, and they ask him, what's most important in the law? And defining the word law properly in Aramaic has nothing to do with the rule of a superior, as the Greek mind would tell us. There's some superior that sets up laws and you better obey. There's no obedience to law. There's no such thing as breaking a law. The word law in Aramaic simply means the way things work. You can't break the way things work. If you do things that produce danger and hostility and fear and rage and guilt and conflict in your life, you're working by the laws of danger and fear and guilt and conflict in your life. But this question was, what do we do to true, you know, the essence of the question to me is, what do we do to really function as human beings? And he says, not love your neighbor, not love the Creator as yourself. But he says, have the condition of rachma active in your mind. And rachma is a filter and a gateway over intentions. The gateway being, when it's open, the energy of love is what fuels your mind. If it's closed, and it will be closed by the activity of any form of hostility or fear, then you don't have a human life working properly. And therefore, and the reason for that is because the mind is not working properly. Therefore, my conclusion that it's a mental illness. And I'll take 100% responsibility for this conclusion. I've never heard it anywhere else. I've never had anybody even start to reference it as that. But to me, it just makes perfect sense and really serves me to be able to acknowledge the truth to myself if I'm in form of hostility or fear. You know, one of the most difficult things for a mind to do when it's in hostility or fear is to discern even what the truth is. So that's my input on that question. And as I say, yeah, in many circles, you're going to want to be very careful, because you're going to be probably talking to dysfunctional minds. And what dysfunctional minds tend to do is attack when they're confronted with things they don't like. So that's my thought on how to present the idea. And, you know, for me, it would depend on what context I'm in. Obviously, I would lay a foundation, you know, if I were going into, in fact, you know, I don't travel the way that I used to, but I used to just about every Sunday be doing a Sunday presentation somewhere. And I could easily see myself doing a, you know, 30 to 45 minute presentation on a mind fueled by hostility and fear is a mind that is in mental illness. I could easily see myself doing that as a message. And with the uplift, that the goal is to recognize that if I'm disconnected from my source, it's like, you know, there's an early worksheet, and the question was, you know, what's the real problem here? The real problem is I made something more important than being connected to my source. Now, that's an idea that was in the worksheet 40 years ago. It took me, and maybe I'm a slow learner, it took me that long to get to recognize, when I'm disconnected from my source, I'm stuck in a mental illness. And I need to be cleaning my mind up in order to be, and also the extension of that is, because the body is the mind and the mind is the body, because they are simply flip sides of exactly the same coin, whatever happens in the mind happens in the body. If someone is in hostility or fear, they have a physical disease. Before called matter is energy. Energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses, there is no matter. Matter does not exist. We don't live in a material world, we live in an energetic world, but our brain makes things that aren't solid look like they're solid. Now, let's use an example. Imagine that I clap my hands. This would be the objection that I've gotten from people when I tell them that there is no matter and there is no body. Look, I just clap my hands together and one hand stopped the other. Obviously, they're solid. Well, no, that doesn't make it obvious that they're solid. What it does mean, or what it, when you have the brain cells for what, and clapping your hands together and they stop each other, what that means is that energy fields who have similar resonant atomic magnetic structures create interference patterns with each other. But let's imagine that I make my left hand out of radio waves and I clap my hands together. What happens? My left hand passes right through my right hand. Obviously, my right hand was not solid. If I make my right hand out of the same radio waves, then they would appear solid to each other again. But there's nothing solid about a radio wave. We understand that. In exactly the same way, there's nothing solid about your hand. They're just similar atomic magnetic structures that create interference patterns with each other. So we have this energy field, and to me, my background's in electronics, side study in physics, and when I first heard the teachings of Yeshua in his native Aramaic language, what started to become very clear to me in a very shorter order, and of course I had the brain cells for this field, as Yeshua says, you know, you can't really use or understand anything he has to say unless you have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. Well, my brain cells were locked in on physics when I got out of school. And when I started hearing things like, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh from Einstein. And then I hear in the opening words in the book of John in Aramaic, where we're told it says in the beginning was the Word and the Word became flesh. But what it really says in Aramaic is in the beginning was the mind energy and the mind energy became flesh. Then we start to realize that, there is this organizing factor called thought. And that organizing factor organizes, break that word down, turns into organic structure, what we call a body. Now, we tend to, in fact, there's a time back, 1600s, I think, where the church and, scientific mind who came up with the thought, I think, therefore I am. It's like, well, cycling information in brain cells is not thinking, but if you think that's thinking, then you might think that's what proves that you are, but not really. And so the church wanted to hold on to the mind, the soul, and, you know, so science went with the body, and they created a false division. But what we call the body and what we call the mind are literally different perspectives on exactly the same structure. I was going to say object, but it's actually not an object. You know, if I took let's say I've got a silver dollar on one side, but I've got George Washington's head, and on the other side of it, there's an eagle. And I show that to two different people. One person sitting on my left says, oh, that's George Washington. The person sitting on my right says, oh, that's an eagle. And I show them that it's a coin, and they go, oh, so we have a singular object and two perspectives on that object. From one perspective, it looks like one thing. From another perspective, it looks like the other. But it is neither. It's a coin. Now, and at what point can I take the head off of the coin and leave only the tail? Can I do that? No, it's impossible. I don't have the original object if I take the head off of the coin. Let's imagine I get a saw fine enough to cut it in two. I still have what we call the flip side of the coin, a head side and a tail side. It just doesn't have the image on it. What I've taken off of it is the image. Well, in precisely the same way, at what point can you take the mind away from the body or the body away from the mind? It's impossible. They are simply flip sides of exactly the same coin. One structure seen from two different perspectives. And so if I have a mental illness of hostility or fear, the tissue in which that energy of that mental illness is resident and vibrating is going to create a literal dis-ease in the tissue. And when I remove, that is, I forgive the dis-ease energy, that which interferes with the functioning of the tissue, then the tissue goes back to health. There's the secret of what, you know, down through the ages, people have called Yeshua the great physician. Why? Because he knew, at least back then, what not too many people even started to suspect. It was mind energy becoming flesh. And there were those things that created illness. Mental illness created physical illness. And of course, at the same time, if we have a mental illness, going to tend to lose our sensibilities about what to do on what we call the physical side of life, i.e. with the mental illness, it might seem like a really good thing to take something that's got a very harsh taste because there's phosphoric acid in it, add some chemicals, add some sugar, add a little bit of flavoring, and drink two or three or six or ten of those a day. Somebody might go, that's a good thing. And having lost one's sensibility, it won't be long before that person's probably going to have things like diabetes and kidney failure. Because phosphoric acid and sugar are very acid-forming products. And in fact, you might remember, if you go back into I believe it was the early 70s, there was a Time magazine cover, and Time had a picture of Lake Erie and said, Lake Erie is dead. One of the Great Lakes. Well, what made them say that Lake Erie was dead? Well, Lake Erie would not support fish any longer. The fish were dying off. Why not? There wasn't enough oxygen in the lake to support the fish living in it. They did some research. They tried to drug the lake. They tried to do all kinds of things. But what they finally had to do was change the pH of the lake. What they found was, and you'll remember that about the same time that was in Life magazine, you'll remember, I believe it was Life, it might have been Time. You'll remember that about that same time, in America, they made it illegal to put phosphoric acid in laundry detergent anymore. Why did they make it illegal to put phosphoric acid in the laundry detergent? Because people did their laundry, and the phosphoric acid turned the water acidic when the water was pumped out into the sewage systems or out into the streets, wherever it went. And the phosphoric acid from industrial sites pouring out of those industrial sites, the lake became acidic. Acidic fluids don't carry oxygen very well. In fact, an acidic fluid drives out oxygen. The oxygen carrying capacity is reduced significantly. And that's what happened to Lake Erie. When they got the pH back into balance, out of the acidic range into an alkaline range, then the lake was able to carry oxygen again, and the fish are doing just fine to this day. But if our mental disorder, because every mental disorder causes pain, is causing so much pain that we're willing to put phosphoric acid and sugar and several chemicals, a little bit of flavoring in it, and stick it in our mouths, all of a sudden, the body of water, somewhere between 75 and 90 plus percent of your structure's water, it gets too acidic, drives the oxygen out. Cells don't last very long. In fact, it was a physician back in the 30s, a German physician, and not thinking of his name offhand, but if you just Google Germany 1930s cancer and pH or acid alkaline, what he was able to do, he did experiments where he took healthy cells, turned the environment of the cells acidic, and those healthy cells became cancerous. When he flooded the cells with alkaline interstitial fluid, got rid of the acid, the cancer cells became healthy cells again. And one of the main things that causes this physiological device to become acidic is acid thinking. We've heard the statement, he has an acrid tongue. What does that mean? He's acidic mind, acidic words. So when we confront something for what it is, I think we have a lot better chance of having acknowledged it, doing something different in order to change it. And I personally found when every time I had hostility or fear come up, I realized or I admitted to myself that my mind was not functioning properly. And I had a mental illness going on. It tremendously helped me to see those states for what they were and do something about it. And of course, the main tool that we offer for folks to do something about it is a tool of forgiveness, which means removal. Taking the mind energy that has become cellular chemistry that creates problems in the cell and removing it so the cell can go back to health. So I hope, Michael, that answer gives you a good insight into my thinking on it. And if there are any other questions, drop a text. And or when you've got the time, let's create a conversation about it.
was that man in Germany, Otto Warburg?
Warburg, yes.
And the gentleman you quoted earlier, the I Think Therefore I Am, was Rene Descartes?
Descartes, yes. Yeah, Descartes. Hey, I should have remembered because I always refer to him as the man who put Descartes before the horse.
And you have a hand up.
Oh, great. Let's say hello.
It is Rex 517. You're on the air.
Well, hi, everybody. It's actually Misty.
Well, welcome, Misty. Good to hear your voice. How are you, young lady?
I'm well, thanks. Hi, everyone. Hi, Jeannie. My question is about if you could share your thoughts on the difference between sleep apnea and still point, which physiologically they're very similar. A person is not taking their oxygen. One is very good for you or helpful, and the other can be detrimental to your health. So I'm curious if you could share any insights about that.
Yeah, to me, they'd be on opposite ends of the spectrum. Sleep apnea happens when people are not breathing and basically going to a miniature state of suspended animation. There's because the cell, the body is not getting enough oxygen. The opposite side of the spectrum would be the still point, where my take is what allows the still point to happen is that because of the still point breath, one is breathing pretty continuously. Sleep apnea, the breath stops. One's breathing continuously and builds up a, sufficient oxygen that the breath can stop for just a moment. And in that state, one goes into a superconductor state. Holding the breath is a resistant state. Now, if we go to the Aramaic, the word Satan means the resistor, one who misleads. And when one goes into resistance, to me that would be the sleep apnea state. The opposite is true when one uses the breath properly in still point, that one goes into a superconductor state where the breath is not required because there's sufficient oxygen built up throughout the tissue structure that all resistance goes. And in that superconductor state, one can move through a ton of energetic dynamics, especially mind energy dynamics, that otherwise they've kept locked in and held via their resistance in tissue. And moving into the still point is kind of like being in super processor state and being able to move that energy through. That would be my mistake.
Okay. Thank you.
Does that make sense? Does that fit?
Now we've got beehives, and we're just busy.
Nice.
We're busy. I know, we're going to have plenty. And, yeah.
That's just pretty cool.
Life is good. Yeah.
I'm with you. Well, one of the things we're enjoying about spring here, like this morning, when I made breakfast, I took, I think we had 6 large, like about from a, to maybe a half inch to 3/4 inch diameter, from 10 inches to 14 inch long asparagus, cut that up and put it in our breakfast dish this morning, just right out of the garden. And that's awesome. This is our third year. Say again?
There's not much better than that, just going out and picking your meat from the garden, or from the tree, or from
sure.
the Yeah.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So that's a pretty nice aspect of spring. We're in our third year of having asparagus in the ground, and this is the first time we've harvested them. We've just been leaving them to grow and strengthen, and now they're coming up like, whoa!
Good. Well, thank you for answering that question. I appreciate you.
And Michael, they're delicious.
All right, dear heart.
All right, bye now.
The two that I had.
Oh yeah, Rex did. I did pick one for you. A couple, didn't I?
Yes, they were delicious. They were really sweet. I ate them all the way down to the very bottom, which I don't normally do.
Yeah, well, the commercial ones you can't really. The bottom gets like a rock, but these ones, I mean, even the very thickest part of them are still tender and juicy.
While we're on the topic of asparagus, I had a conversation with a second cousin yesterday. Her husband, my cousin, died of cancer, bladder cancer, several years ago. And we got on the topic of food that supports the body, and she said that asparagus is a food that's known to support healing of cancer. Have you ever heard of that?
No, I had not heard of that. It's not, well, I think, you know, virtually any actual raw organic food is going to contribute to healing, although, you know, there's that old thing about asparagus pea, and it doesn't happen with everybody, but people that it happens with, when you take a whiff of asparagus pea, it's obviously something toxic happening, so the fact that just eating asparagus can, an hour later, give you some very obvious signs of detox, it would make sense that it would be healing.
Yeah. Hold on. Thank you.
So we're not letting it get ahead of us. We're getting about 6 or 8 nice big spears a day right now and challenge on them. Yes, and glad you got to have a couple there while you were here, Rex.
Yeah. It was awesome.
Cool. All right, well, any other thoughts for either of you guys? How are you doing, Rex? Anything to share? Any questions, thoughts, answers, ideas?
I'm doing well. I really enjoyed I heard the last half of the program yesterday, and you resonated what I shared at the end of the program, that experience of Yeshua, you know, that I felt like I became him and I was on the cross. That's what the experience was, and my reasoning ability said, no, wait a minute. That's not what actually happened, but I tuned into a frequency, and it was, I was sharing it with such love and clarity that the frequencies in my understanding blended, and then I resonated it, and I could feel it. And I think it's so important for all of us is just to recognize the true oneness of our being, and to be able to interact with each other based on that. I mean, you spoke about that quite a bit at the beginning, I think, too. You know, so and whatever I can do to reaffirm that and to strengthen it, I do on a daily basis. It makes a world of difference for how I experience the world, you know, everything in it.
And it changes the world, too.
Yes, it does. Yes, and that's, I love that we have, you know, we're on 10 acres here, and we've done so much. We've got a 40 by 70 foot garden area and a 12 by 20 foot hoop house. We got a large chicken coop with 17 chickens, and, you know,
nice.
We just added the bees, and we're going to keep moving in the direction of, you know, self-sustaining, because I think that's really important. And plus, the food is so much more vital and healthy. And what I've noticed is about the property just keeps, you know, the earth just keeps giving. You know, we appreciate it, we nurture it with manure and different types of things, and it just keeps producing more. So it's pretty exciting, and I think that's kind of how it's designed to do it, and rather than just taking and not giving anything back, there's a mutual exchange of energy, and it's, I think it really appreciates us being here, and we appreciate everything that this plot of land is offering us on a regular basis.
Well, one of the things being in the city here that I do when our gardens are going is usually on Mondays, I take a little drive around the neighborhood. I've got a rack on the back of my van, and I collect grass clippings and put them in the soil or in to build soil. We're actually the property we're on. When we first came here 5 years ago, if you dug an inch beneath the lawn, all you had was red and gray clay. That was it. I mean, this whole hill's just solid clay and rock. And so we've been soil building forever. And to me, it's just so magical that, you know, you put a little hole in the soil that you've taken care of, you drop this little thing in it, and wealth comes out of the ground. That's amazing. Pretty amazing.
It is amazing.
And it's a wealth that's available to everybody, and so many people don't even bother, don't realize, I don't think, that that's a real possibility. And it's pretty amazing gift.
And generations of people who actually think that the grocery store must grow it when you're real young, you know.
Yes.
That's where we get all our food, isn't it? You know, so that's important. I know you're talking about organic matter. It's vital for the health of the soil and the health of the earth. And when I had my garden back in Lansing, in our previous home, literally 40 years, we put in, I averaged in the first 30 years, and we started out like you were describing, it took the guy 4 hours to do a 12 by 12 square, and all he could do is get down 2.5 to 3 inches, you know, to plow it up. I started putting in and doing, you know, organic gardening in that area, in that plot of the property where we had our garden.
Right.
I put 75 bags of leaves every season at the end of the year in that garden, and it just sucked it up. By the time winter was over, it was all gone. You know, the ground just, it was almost as if all the creatures, well, not almost as if, they just consumed it. And it just turns into soil. And it's, you know, the more of us that do something that's nurturing, I mean, Native Americans were so wise. They, if they took a plant or took something from, you know, the ground, they would always honor the earth by giving something back. In that case, a lot of times it was tobacco or something that was of a vital nature to them. And they never ran out of food. You know, they had all the food they needed. It was always there.
Definitely. One of the insights for me that came as we started working with the soil here is that you can't grow food on dirt. You've got to have soil. And most commercial so-called food that you get in the grocery store, the first thing they do is pour 10 gallons per acre of glyphosate onto the soil to make sure everything in the soil is dead, and now soil becomes dirt. And then take something that's totally dead and try to get something alive out of it. I think that's one of the reasons why this generation of young people, at least at this stage so far, it's going to be the first generation in the history of America that the children are not going to live as long as the parents did. Their life expectancy is being reduced. And I think that's one of the reasons, because people are, you know, for the matter of profit, this whole game has been done. Well, we kill everything on the land, so now we have dirt. And of course, you can't really really uptake nutrients from dirt, so we'll get to sell you some chemical fertilizers, so there'll be nutrients that'll get into food. Of course, it's not going to be the 380 nutrients that are designed. It'll just be NPK. There'll be three, but it makes things look like food. Of course, there's little to no nutrition. There's been a lot of research done on that, and there's no life in it. You can't get life from death. And you go to the grocery store and you buy that, and people wonder why, you know, our health statistics are becoming so tragic in this country. That's a, I think, a big factor. And, to me, the fact that I get to go out and work in the soil rather than paying to go to a gym is a whole lot more safe than going to the gym and the grocery store. it's definitely, for me, opened up a whole different world. And I can remember when I used to go visit you there and watch you work in that garden. And of course, we had gardens at Heartland, but I never really got my hands in them. And so being here the last 5 years, it's been really pretty wonderful, pretty awesome for me. It's not something I ever really even considered that I would enjoy, but I'm loving it and having a blast. And Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, just the energetic patterns, the blessed gases that come off of those organisms, just breathing them directly, let alone taking them in through food, is a gift.
Sorry to say this morning.
Oh, just that was my project this morning. Was out collecting, you know, amendments for the for a new. We're opening another. Area for our native species garden. And so went out and got a couple of hundred pounds of people's grass clippings and some twigs and such and put it on a new area. We've just gotten that ready. I finished that off this morning with about six bags of grass clippings to create amendments and build soil. So,
well, you know, and
you're there doing the same.
Exactly. That addresses the question I had for you, because I know what I would do is I would also grab clippings, but I had made sure that they didn't use any of the glyphosate and the chemicals and the pesticides and so forth. But if you're putting it on the flower garden, that's still not optimal, but it's still going to feed it, and you're not eating it. So that's why I asked that you pay attention to that as well.
There are certain neighbors, you know, within about a mile and a half radius that I've come to know, and before I've taken, you know, they put their grass clippings out on the side of the road, the city comes along and takes them and actually composts them, but before I take a load, I'll knock on that person's door and say, mind if I take these clippings, and I've never had anybody say no, and then I ask, do you use any chemicals on it, any kind of pesticides or anything? If they do, I don't touch it. But otherwise, so I've kind of come to know who people are and what they do, and so that's what I collect up. I've got kind of a route that I do, and you know, people. I don't think people realize that, you know, for that blade of grass to grow, that takes a lot of vitality, a lot of nutrition. It takes a lot out of the soil, and people cut that stuff and just throw it away or leaves. I mean, how deep, you know, our mix of leaves and such, how deep are those roots in that tree, and what are they bringing up from deep in the earth and putting it into the leaves, and then the leaves fall and people throw them away, or in some cases pay to get them taken away. It's like, that's nutrition. That's, what are you doing with that? But most people don't have a clue and don't care.
Yeah, I like to call it green gold.
That's what it is.
They break down so fast. Awesome.
Pretty cool. All right, my friend. Well, you have a blessed one.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye. Well, Miss Jeannie, what's on your mind today?
Well, what I was thinking of when you're talking about the Native Americans and blessing, you know, the being thankful and honoring the earth for giving back. And I thought of our apple tree out front. I mean, it used to produce little hard apples that you couldn't peel or cook or cut or anything. And a couple years ago, we started collecting them. And last year, the apples were so much better. I mean, they were just really nice apples. And then this year, it's full of blossoms. And our peach tree is full of little tiny peach buds. And I think it's the same. You know, we've been giving and caring and loving, and you know, there's been no pesticides or poisons or anything put on the yards, and it's giving back in full abundance. So that's what I thought of.
That's a great point. Yeah, and actually, I don't think we even that particular tree that you're talking about, which the last 2 years has just given us some awesome tasting apples. I don't think the first couple of years we were here that there were any apples on that tree. And as we started to pay attention to that hill and started to plant native species flowers and such, and harvested, and every time we would harvest, the first year there were apples, anytime we would harvest them, we would thank the tree. And it does definitely seem to be responding. I mean, this year it's just, wow, just really out there. So,
yeah.
Kind of like life. Appreciate it, and it happens.
And Terry had his hand up, but then he took it down. I don't know if he's at a place where he can still talk. I'm going to turn on his microphone. 336, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. Hey there, Brother Terry. How are you, young man?
Oh, I'm doing very well. Beautiful, beautiful day. Enjoying the show, and I had hit the queue and then took it off. I stopped for a minute, but yeah, I'm back. And I was going to respond to the young lady's comment on the oxygen. You know, so, and what I was going to add was my experience in doing the numerous breath sessions. And then the last few have had a characteristic that the previous ones didn't happen. And a lot of it is due to the change in my physiology because of the accident. Okay. And the accident created a constriction and restriction, you know, especially this last session, which you were encouraging me to open and expand and get the full breath in. And afterwards, I mean, it's the next day afterwards I'm talking, I had opened and expanded so much, I was sore physically. You know, I could feel where the bones had stretched, the muscles, and had opened that space up. So naturally, I would think that was allowing for the influx of loss of life supporting oxygen, you know, and opening that up, stretching that structure out. But I was really amazed at how much it stretched me and how much it opened me up for that one session.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome. And those who are listening, that's good input. And for those who are listening that don't know Terry, what's that, 4 years ago now, Terry, you had that fall?
Yes, it was 4 years ago, November.
Mm-hmm. So Terry's a contractor, and he was on the second story of a building on a walkway, and the railing had been taken off, and you didn't realize it, and when you were carrying something, walking backward, and literally dropped 14 feet to a flat in your back on a concrete floor. And, pretty intense time.
Yeah, it was a horrible impact, and it just exploded my upper body, and it ended with a trip on a helicopter, a life flight to the bigger hospital. And the first comment the doctor made was, Mr. know why you're alive, you know. And there was that chance. And it's been a journey, but that was one of the more beautiful pieces, was that last breath session and feeling that return in the opening. Those 8 of my ribs were broken loose, front and back. So they were just hanging by the muscle tissue in there, so the body would tensed up in an effort to hold all that in place, keep it from moving, to minimize the pain.
Right.
So a lot of restriction went on there, a lot of restriction.
Well, I congratulate you. I acknowledge you for the courage you had to face life and keep moving after that fall. I mean, that was just monumental. And I know the first time I saw you after that happened, it was like I had to breathe. And so delighted that that opening happened. And, you know, this Saturday and Sunday have to be Mind Shifters and Still Fun Breathing weekend. So I'll hold the space that you get even the next level of opening this weekend.
All right.
Cool. All right, Terry, we appreciate you. Cheers, you.
Same here.
All right, take care. I'm glad you appreciate you and cherish you. That's great.
Yeah. That's a good one.
All right, sir. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Blessings.
All right. So awesome to extend life. So, Miss Ginny, it looks like we're down to about 3 minutes or so. Do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room? Or any other questions to answer?
No, it's all quiet. There is a comment from Podbean says, on a side note, I love Terry's voice. What a journey, beloved sibling.
Nice.
There is a hand just went up and we are down to 4 minutes, but let's see what we can do quickly. It's Celinda 541. You're on the air.
Good morning, Michael and Jeannie. This is, you just said, Celinda.
Welcome.
Yes.
Just welcome. You have to be young lady.
I'd be fine. We're both waiting for the other to take a breath and speak. I'm fine, thank you. I have a real quickie for you. In reference to the asparagus, is asparagus good for cancer? A treatment, you know, as an alternative treatment to cancer. And when my grandmother had breast cancer in, I think it was the early 70s, and I had found a whole bunch of old prevention magazines on the free shelf at the library, and I brought them home. I went through them, and there was an article in there in Prevention about cancer research and cancer asparagus being a vegetable that seemed to really help cancer patients into remission and or improvement. And the only admonition it had was it didn't work if you already had chemotherapy. And you could eat it, it said, you could eat canned asparagus, you could eat fresh asparagus, you know, it didn't matter. But
right.
Once the person had gone through chemo, they didn't find it worked anymore.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense, uplifting. And as I say, you know, it's obvious there's some kind of a detox going on. If you eat asparagus an hour later, you pee. It's very clear that something's being moved out of the system.
That's really interesting, too, because I remember seeing an old Seventh-day Adventist video, and they said, oh, don't eat asparagus, it's toxic. So it goes to show you how knowledge is built upon knowledge and how we do stand on the shoulders of the past as we move forward in our revelations and our research. And that's all I had to share. Unfortunately, my grandmother had chemo already, so that didn't work for her. Well, a little blessing.
Okay, we'll see you out enjoying the garden.
Yeah, I'm going on this afternoon.
All right. Have a blessed one.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome.